and Columbus immediately punched him in the stomach with one flipper and knocked him down with the other. Nelson lay there with his eyes closed. Columbus then counted 10 over the prostrate Nelson, and again the 10 other penguins applauded.
"That's part of the act," explained Janie. "The other penguins all like Columbus to win, and so they all say, 'Gook!' at the end. That always makes Nelson look away, so Columbus can sock him good."
Nelson now rose to his feet, and all the penguins formed in a row and bowed to the manager. "Thank you," said the manager, bowing back. "Now comes part 3," said Mr. Popper.
"Oh, Papa," said Mrs. Popper, "you forgot to bring the 2 painting stepladders and the board."
"That's all right," said the manager. "I'll get the stagehands to bring some." In no time at all, a pair of ladders and a board were brought in, and Mr. Popper and the children showed them how the ladders had to be set up, with the board resting on top. Then Mrs. Popper began playing the pretty descriptive piece, "By the Brook." At this point in the act, the penguins always forgot their discipline and got dreadfully excited. They would all begin shoving at once to see which could be the first to climb the ladders. However, the children had always told Mr. Popper that the act was all the funnier for all this pushing and scrambling, and Mr. Popper supposed it was. So now, with a great deal of squawking, the penguins fought and climbed the ladders and ran across the board in complete confusion, often knocking each other entirely off to the floor below, and then hurrying to toboggan down the other ladder and knock off any penguins who were trying to climb up there. This part of the act was very wild and noisy, in spite of Mrs. Popper's delicate music. The manager and the audience were all holding their sides laughing. At last, Mrs. Popper got to the end of the music and took off her gloves.
"You'll have to get those ladders off the stage, or I'll never get these birds under control," said Mr. Popper. "The curtain is supposed to fall at this point."
So the manager gave the signal for the curtain to go down, and the audience stood up and cheered. When the ladders had been taken away, the manager had 12 ice cream cones brought in for the penguins.
Then Janie and Bill began to cry, so the manager ordered several more, and everybody had one.
Mr. Greenbaum was the first to congratulate the Poppers.
"I don't mind telling you, Mr. Popper, that I think you've got something absolutely unique in those birds. Your act is a sensation, and the way you helped out my friend the manager here shows that you're real troopers, the kind we need in the show business. I'd like to predict that your penguins will soon be packing the biggest theaters from Oregon to Maine. And now, to come to terms, Mr. Popper," he continued, "how about a 10-week contract at $5,000 a week?"
"Is that all right, Mama?" asked Mr. Popper. "Yes, that's very satisfactory," answered Mrs. Popper.
"Well then," said Mr. Greenbaum, "just sign these papers and be ready to open next Thursday in Seattle."
"And thanks again," said the manager. "Would you mind putting on your gloves again for just a minute, Mrs. Popper? I'd like you to start playing that military march again and let the penguins parade for a minute. I want to get my ushers in here to look at those birds. It would be a lesson to them."
Chapter 16. On the Road. During the next day, there was much to be done at 432 Proudfoot Avenue. There were new clothes to buy for all of them, and the old ones to pack away in mothballs. Then Mrs. Popper had to scrub and polish and straighten the whole place, for she was much too good a housekeeper to leave everything at 6s and 7s while the Poppers were away. Mr. Greenbaum sent them their first week's pay in advance. The first thing they did was to pay off the man who had installed the freezing plant in the basement. He had been getting rather uneasy about his money,
and after all, without him they could never have trained the penguins. Next, they sent a check to the company who had been shipping the fresh fish all the way from the coast. At last, everything was done, and Mr. Popper turned the key in the door of the little house. They were a little late in arriving at the railway station on account of the argument with the traffic policeman. The argument was on account of the accident of the two taxicabs. With 4 poppers and 12 penguins, not to mention the 8 suitcases and pail of water with the live fish for the penguins' lunch, Mr. Popper found that they could not all fit into one cab, so he had to call a second one. Each of the taxi drivers was eager to be the first to get to the station and surprise the people there by opening the door of his cab and letting out 6 penguins. So they raced each other all the way, and in the last block they tried to pass each other, and one of the fenders got torn off. The traffic officer, naturally, got very much annoyed. The train was about to pull out of the station when they arrived. Even with both taxi drivers helping them through the gate and over the brass rails onto the rear observation platform, they barely made it. The penguins were gasping. It had been decided that Mr. Popper should ride in the baggage car with the penguins to keep them from getting nervous, while Mrs. Popper and the children should ride in one of the Pullmans. Because of getting on at the observation end of the train, Mr. Popper had to take the birds through the whole length of the train. It was easy enough to get them through the club car, even with the pail of fish to carry. In the sleeping cars, however, where the porter was already making up some of the berths, there was trouble. The porter's ladders offered too much temptation to the penguins. There were a dozen happy arcs from a dozen ecstatic beaks. Popper's performing penguins, completely forgetting their discipline, fought to climb the ladders and get into the upper berths. Poor Mr. Popper. One old lady screamed that she was going to get off the train, whether it was going 90 miles an hour or not. A gentleman wearing a clergyman's collar suggested opening a window so that the penguins could jump out. 2 porters tried to shoo the birds out of the berths. Finally, the conductor and the brakeman, with a lantern, came to the rescue. It was quite a while before Mr. Popper got his pets safely into the baggage car. Mrs. Popper worried a little at the start over the idea of having Janie and Bill miss 10 weeks of school while they were on the road, though the children did not seem to mind. "And you must remember, my love," said Mr. Popper, who had never before been out of Stillwater in spite of his dreams of distant countries, "that travel is very broadening." From the start, the penguins were a riotous success. Even their opening performance in Seattle went off without a hitch, probably because they had already rehearsed on a real stage. It was here that the penguins added a little novelty number of their own to the program. They were the first thing on the bill. When they finished their regular act, the audience went wild. They clapped and stamped and roared for more of Popper's performing penguins. Janie and Bill helped their father herd the penguins off the stage so that the next act could go on. This next act was a tightrope walker named Monsieur Duval. The trouble was that instead of watching him from the wings, as they should have done, the penguins got interested and walked out on the stage again to watch him more closely. Unfortunately, at this moment, Monsieur Duval was doing a very difficult dance on the wire overhead. The audience, of course, had thought that the penguins were all through and were very much pleased to see them return and line up with their backs to the audience and look up at Monsieur Duval, dancing so carefully on the wire high above them. This made everyone laugh so hard that Monsieur Duval lost his balance. "Ark?" said the penguins, waddling away hurriedly, in order not to be under him when he fell. Cleverly recovering his balance, Monsieur Duval caught the wire by the inside of his elbow and saved himself. He was very angry when he saw the popper-performing penguins opening wide their 12 red beaks as if they were laughing at him.
"Go away, you stupid things," he said to them in French.
"Ork?" said the penguins, pretending not to understand, and making remarks to each other in penguin language about Monsieur Duval. And whenever they appeared, the more they interfered with the other acts on the program, the better the audiences liked them. Chapter 17 Fame. The birds soon became so famous that whenever it was known that the popper performing penguins were to appear at any theater, the crowds would stand in line for half a mile down the street, waiting their turn to buy tickets. The other actors on the program were not always so pleased, however. Once, in Minneapolis, a celebrated lady opera singer got very much annoyed when she heard that the popper penguins were to appear on the same program. In fact, she refused to go on the stage unless the penguins were put away. So the stagehands helped Mr. and Mrs. Popper and the children get the birds off the stage and downstairs to a basement under the stage, while the manager guarded the stage entrance to make sure the penguins did not get past. Down in the basement, the birds soon discovered another little flight of steps going up, and in another minute, the audience was shrieking with laughter as the penguins' heads suddenly appeared one by one in the orchestra pit where the musicians were playing. The musicians kept on playing, and the lady on the stage, when she saw the penguins, sang all the louder to show how angry she was. The audience was laughing so hard that nobody could hear the words of her song. Mr. Popper, who had followed the penguins up the stairs, stopped when he saw that it led to the orchestra pit. "I don't think I'm supposed to go up there with the musicians," he told Mrs. Popper.
"The penguins did," said Mrs. Popper.
"Papa, you'd better get them off before they start biting the pegs and strings off the fiddles," said Bill.
"Oh dear, I just don't know what to do," said Mr. Popper, sitting down helplessly on the top step.
"Then I will catch the penguins," said Mrs. Popper, climbing up past him, with Janie and Bill following.
When they saw Mrs. Popper coming after them, the penguins felt very guilty, because they knew they did not belong there. So they jumped up on the stage, ran over the footlights, and hid under the singing lady's blue skirts. That stopped the singing entirely, except for one high, shrill note that had not been written in the music. The birds loved the bright lights of the theater, and the great laughing audiences and all the traveling. There was always something new to see. From Stillwater out to the Pacific coast they traveled. It was a long way now to the little house at 432 Proudfoot Avenue, where the paupers had had to worry about whether their money would hold out until spring. And every week, they got a check for $5,000. When they were not actually playing in some theater or traveling on trains between cities, their life was spent in the larger hotels. Now and then, a startled hotel keeper would object to having the birds register there.
"Why, we don't even allow lap dogs in this hotel," he would say.
"Yes, but do you have any rule against penguins?" Mr. Popper would ask. Then the hotel keeper would have to admit that there was no rule at all about penguins. And of course, when he saw how neat the penguins were and how other guests came to his hotel in the hope of seeing them, he was very glad to have them. You might think that a large hotel would offer a great many opportunities for mischief to a lot of penguins, but they behaved very well on the whole, never doing anything worse than riding up and down too often in the elevators, and occasionally biting the brass buttons off some bellboy's uniform. $5,000 a week may sound like a great deal of money, and yet the paupers were far from rich. It was quite expensive to live in grand hotels and travel about town in taxicabs. Mr. Pauper often thought that the penguins could just as well have walked back and forth between hotels and theaters, but every one of their walks looked so much like a parade that it always tied up the traffic. So Mr. Pauper, who never liked to be a nuisance to anyone, always took taxis instead. It was expensive to have huge cakes of ice brought up to their hotel rooms to cool the penguins. The bills to the fine restaurants where the paupers often took their meals were often dreadfully high. Fortunately, however, the penguins' food had stopped being an expense to them. On the road, they had to give up having tank cars of live fish shipped to them because it was so hard to get deliveries on time, so they went back to feeding the birds on canned shrimps. This cost them absolutely nothing, for Mr. Pauper had written a testimonial saying, "Pauper's performing penguins thrive on Owen's oceanic shrimp." This statement, with a picture of the 12 penguins, was printed in all the leading magazines, and the Owens Oceanic Shrimp Company gave Mr. Pauper an order that was good for free cans of shrimps at any grocery store anywhere in the country. Several other companies, such as the Great Western Spinach Growers Association and the Energetic Breakfast Oats Company, wanted him to recommend their product too, and offered him large sums of cash. But the penguins simply refused to eat spinach or oats, and Mr. Pauper was much too honest to say they would, even though he knew the money would come in handy. From the Pacific coast they turned east again to cross the continent. They had time enough on this brief tour to touch only the larger cities. After Minneapolis, they played Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, and Philadelphia. Wherever they went, their reputation traveled ahead of them. When, early in April, they reached Boston, huge crowds awaited them in the railway station. Up to now, it had not been too difficult to keep the penguins comfortable. But a warm spring wind was blowing across Boston Common, and at the hotel, Mr. Pauper had to have the ice brought up to his rooms in 1,000-pound cakes. He was glad that the 10-week contract was almost up, and that the next week, when his birds were to appear in New York, was the last. Already Mr. Greenbaum was writing about a new contract. Mr. Pauper was beginning to think, however, that he had better be getting back to Stillwater, for the penguins were growing irritable. Chapter 18. April Winds. If it was unseasonably warm in Boston, it was actually hot in New York. In their rooms at the Great Tower Hotel, overlooking Central Park, the penguins were feeling the heat badly. Mr. Pauper took them up to the roof garden to catch whatever cool breeze might be blowing. The penguins were all charmed by the sparkling lights and the confusion of the city below. The younger birds began crowding over to the edge of the roof and looking down at the great canyons beneath them. It made Mr. Pauper very nervous to see them pushing each other, as if at any moment they might succeed in pushing one over. He remembered how the South Pole penguins always did this to find out what danger lay below. The roof was not a safe place for them. Mr. Pauper had never forgotten how badly frightened he had been when Captain Cook had been so ill before Greta came. He could not risk the chance of losing one of his penguins now. Where the penguins were concerned, nothing was ever too much trouble for him. He took them downstairs again and bathed them under the cold showers in the bathroom. This kept him busy a large part of the night. With all this lack of sleep, he was quite drowsy the next morning when he had to call the taxis to get to the theater. Besides, Mr. Popper had always been a little absent-minded. That is how he made his great mistake when he said to the first taxi driver, "Regal Theater."
"Yes, sir," said the driver, threading his way in and out the traffic of Broadway, which greatly interested both the children and the penguins. They had almost reached the theater when the driver suddenly turned.
"Say," he said, "you don't mean to say those penguins are going to be on the same bill with Swenson's Seals, do you?"
"I don't know what else is on the bill," said Mr. Popper, paying him. "Anyway, here's the Regal." And they piled out and filed in the stage entrance. In the wings stood a large, burly, red-faced man.
"So, these are the Popper performing penguins, huh?" he said. "Well, I want to tell you, Mr. Popper, that I'm Sven Swenson, and those are my seals in there on the stage now, and if your birds try any funny business, it'll be too bad for them. My seals are tough, see? They'd think nothing of eating two or three penguins apiece."
From the stage could be heard the hoarse barks of the seals who were going through their act.
"Papa," said Mrs. Popper, "the penguins are the last act on the bill. You go run back quick and get those taxis, and we'll let the penguins ride around a while until it's time for their number."
Mr. Popper hurried out to catch the drivers. When he returned, it was too late. The Popper performing penguins had already discovered the Swenson seals.
"Papa, I can't look," cried the children.
There was a sound of dreadful confusion on the stage. The audience was in an uproar, and the curtain was quickly rung down. When the Poppers rushed onto the stage, both penguins and seals had found the stairway leading to the Swenson dressing room and were on their way upstairs.
"I can't bear to think what's happening up there," said Mr. Popper with a shudder.
Mr. Swenson only laughed.
"I hope your birds were insured, Popper," he said. "How much were they worth? Well, let's go up and look."
"You go up, Papa," said Mrs. Popper. "Bill, you run out of the theater and call the police to come and try to save some of our penguins."
"I'll go get the fire department," said Janie.
When the firemen, with a great clanging, came and set up their ladders so that they could get in through the window of Mr. Swenson's dressing room, they were a little vexed to find that there was no fire at all. However, when they found six black-mustached seals sitting barking in the middle of the room, with 12 penguins parading gaily around them in a square, they felt better. Then the policemen came in their patrol and climbed up the ladder which the firemen had left against the building. By the time they, too, came through the window, they could scarcely believe their eyes, for the firemen had put firemen's helmets on the penguins, which made the delighted birds look very silly and girlish. Seeing the firemen so friendly with the penguins, the policemen naturally took sides with the seals and put policemen's caps on them. The seals looked very fierce with their long black mustaches and black faces underneath. The penguins under their firemen's helmets were parading in front of the policemen, while the seals, in their policemen's caps, were barking at the firemen, when Mr. Popper and Mr. Swenson finally opened the door. Mr. Popper sat down. His relief was so great that for a moment he could not speak.
"You policemen had better get your hats off my seals now," said Mr. Swenson. "I got to go down on the stage and finish the act now."
Then he and his six seals slipped out of the room with a few parting barks.
"Well, goodbye, ducks," said the firemen, regretfully removing their helmets from the penguins and putting them back on their own heads.
Then they disappeared down the ladder. The penguins, of course, wanted to follow, but Mr. Popper held them back. Just then the door flew open, and the theater manager burst into the room.
"Hold that man," he shouted to the policeman, pointing at Mr. Popper. "I have a warrant for his arrest."
"Who, me?" said Mr. Popper in a daze. "What have I done?"
"You've broken into my theater and thrown the place into a panic. That's what you've done. You're a disturber of the peace."
"But I'm Mr. Popper, and these are my performing penguins, famous from coast to coast."
"I don't care who you are. You haven't any business in my theater."
"But Mr. Greenbaum is going to pay us $5,000 for a week at the Regal."
"Mr. Greenbaum's theater is the Royal, not the Regal. You've come to the wrong theater. Anyway, out you go, you and your performing penguins. The patrol is waiting outside."
Chapter 19 Admiral Drake. So Mr. Popper, with Captain Cook, Greta, Columbus, Louisa, Nelson, Jenny, Magellan, Adelina, Scott, Isabella, Ferdinand, and Victoria, was bundled into the patrol wagon and hustled off to the police station. None of his pleas would move the desk sergeant.
"That theater manager was pretty mad at you the way you busted into his theater. So, I'm holding you. I'm going to give you all a nice, quiet cell, unless you furnish bail. I'm putting the bail at $500 for you, and $100 for each of the birds."
Of course, Mr. Popper did not have that much money about him. Neither did Mrs. Popper when they telephoned her at the hotel. The hotel bill was paid for several days ahead, but she had no cash. The check for the final week's salary was not due until the end of the week. Indeed, it now looked as if the Poppers would never see that check, since they could not get the penguins out of jail long enough to put on their act at the Royal Theater. If only they could have got in touch with Mr. Greenbaum, Mr. Popper knew, that kind man would have got them out. But Mr. Greenbaum was somewhere in Hollywood, out on the Pacific coast, and the Poppers had no idea how to reach him. It was very dull for the birds in jail. Wednesday came, and there was no word from Mr. Greenbaum. Thursday, and the birds began to droop. It was soon apparent that the lack of exercise, combined with the heat, might prove too much for them. There were no more tricks or merry games. Even the younger birds sat all day in dismal silence, and Mr. Popper could not cheer them up. Mr. Popper had a feeling that Mr. Greenbaum would probably turn up by the end of the week to see about renewing the contract. But Friday passed without any news of him. Saturday morning, Mr. Popper got up very early and smoothed his hair. Then he dusted off the penguins as well as he could, for he wanted everything to look as presentable as possible in case Mr. Greenbaum should appear. About 10 o'clock, there was a sound of footsteps in the corridor and a jingling of keys, and the door of the cell was opened.
"You're free, Mr. Popper. There's a friend of yours here."
Mr. Popper stepped out into the light with the penguins.
"You're barely in time, Mr. Greenbaum," he was about to say. Then, as his eyes became accustomed to the light, he looked again.
It was not Mr. Greenbaum who stood there. It was a great bearded man in a splendid uniform. Smiling, he held out his hand to Mr. Popper.
"Mr. Popper," he said, "I am Admiral Drake."
"Admiral Drake," gasped Mr. Popper. "Not back from the South Pole?"
"Yes," said the Admiral. "The Drake Antarctic Expedition ship returned yesterday. You should have seen the reception New York gave us. You can read about it in today's paper.
but I read about the trouble you were having over the penguins, and so here I am. I have a long story to tell you.
Could we go to the hotel and talk about it? Asked Mr. Popper. My wife will be anxious to see us back.
Certainly, said the Admiral.
And when they were all settled in the Popper rooms at the hotel, with the penguins clustering round to listen, Admiral Drake began.
Naturally, when I knew that I was coming back to America, I often thought about the man to whom I had sent the penguin. It takes us a long time to hear things down there, and I often wondered how you and the bird were getting along. Last night, at the mayor's dinner for us, I heard about the wonderful trained penguin act you had been putting on all over the country. This morning, I picked up the paper, and the first thing I read was that Mr. Popper and his 12 penguins were still being held in jail. But 12 penguins, Mr. Popper! How on earth?
Then Mr. Popper told how Greta had arrived to keep Captain Cook from being lonely, and how the little penguins had grown, and how the clever little band had saved the day for the Poppers when things looked bad.
It's amazing, said Admiral Drake. I've seen a lot of penguins in my time, but never such educated ones as these. It certainly shows what patience and training can do. But now, to get to my real point, Mr. Popper. You probably know that I have explored the North Pole as well as the South Pole?
Oh, yes, said Mr. Popper respectfully. I have read books about both your Arctic and your Antarctic expeditions.
Well then, said the Admiral, maybe you know why we explorers prefer the South Pole.
Could it be on account of the penguins, sir? Asked Janie, who had been listening very hard.
Admiral Drake patted her head.
Yes, my dear. Those long polar nights get pretty dull when you have no pets to play with. Of course, there are polar bears up there, but you can't play with them. Nobody knows why there are no penguins at the North Pole. For a long time, the United States government had been wanting me to lead an expedition up there for the purpose of establishing a breed of penguins. I must come to the point, Mr. Popper. You've had such remarkable success with these birds of yours. Why not let me take them to the North Pole and start a race of penguins there?
Just then, Mr. Greenbaum and another gentleman were announced. They shook hands all around and were introduced to the Admiral.
Well, Popper, said Mr. Greenbaum, too bad about that mix-up over the theaters. But never mind, here's Mr. Klein, who owns the Colossal Film Company. He's going to make your fortune. You'll be a poor man no longer, Mr. Popper.
Poor? Said Mr. Popper. I'm not poor. These birds have been earning us $5,000 a week.
Oh, $5,000, said Mr. Klein. What's that? Pin money. I want to put those birds in the movies, Mr. Popper. We've got the story department working on stories for them already. Why, I'll put each of those birds under a contract that will keep you and the missus on Easy Street the rest of your lives.
Papa, whispered Mrs. Popper, I don't want to live on Easy Street. I want to go back to Proudfoot Avenue.
Better consider, Mr. Popper, said the Admiral. I can't offer you anything like that.
You say those men at the North Pole get lonely because there are no penguins? Asked Mr. Popper.
Very lonely, said the Admiral.
But if there were penguins up there, mightn't the polar bears eat them?
Oh, ordinary penguins, yes, said the Admiral judiciously, but not such highly trained birds as yours, Mr. Popper. They could outwit any polar bear, I guess.
It was now Mr. Klein's turn to speak.
In every moving picture house in America, little children would have the pleasure of seeing stories acted by the Popper performing penguins, he said.
Of course, if we succeeded in establishing the breed at the North Pole, said the Admiral, the name might have to be changed a little. I imagine that hundreds of years from now, scientists would be calling them the Popper Arctic Penguins.
Mr. Popper was silent for a moment. Gentlemen, he said, I want to thank you both. I'll give you my decision tomorrow.
Chapter 20 Farewell, Mr. Popper. It was a hard decision to make. Long after the visitors had gone, Mr. and Mrs. Popper sat and discussed what was best for everybody. Mrs. Popper could see the advantages of both offers, and she pointed these out without trying to influence him.
I feel that the penguins are really your responsibility, she said, and you must make up your mind.
It was a pale and haggard Mr. Popper who was ready to announce his decision the next day.
Mr. Klein, he said, I want you to know how much I appreciate your offer of putting my birds in the movies, but I am afraid I have to refuse. I do not believe the life in Hollywood would be good for the penguins.
Then he turned to Admiral Drake.
Admiral Drake, I am going to give you the birds. In doing this, I am considering the birds first of all. I know that they have been comfortable and happy with me. Lately, though, with the excitement and the warm weather, I've been worried about them. The birds have done so much for me that I have to do what is best for them. After all, they belong in a cold climate. And then I can't help being sorry for those men up at the North Pole without any penguins to help them pass the time.
Your government will thank you, Mr. Popper, answered the Admiral.
Congratulations, Admiral, said Mr. Klein. Maybe you're right at that, Popper. Hollywood might have been too much for the birds. I wish you'd let me make one short movie of them here in New York, though, before they go. Just some pictures of the sort of thing they do on the stage, you know. We'd show the film everywhere with an announcement that these are the famous Popper Penguins that are being taken to the North Pole by Admiral Drake of the United States Arctic Penguin Foundation Expedition, or something like that.
I'd like that very much, said Mr. Popper.
We'd pay you, of course, continued Mr. Klein. Not a fortune, as we could have if you'd let us give them a contract, but say $25,000?
We could use it, said Mrs. Popper.
It will be very quiet at 432 Proudfoot Avenue, said Mr. Popper when everyone had left. Mrs. Popper did not answer. She knew that nothing she could say could really comfort him.
However, said Mr. Popper, now that spring is here, a lot of people will be wanting their houses painted, so we'd better be getting back.
Anyway, said Bill, we've had 10 whole weeks of vacation right in the middle of the year, and not many children in Stillwater can say that.
The next day, the cameramen arrived to make the picture of the penguins doing their tricks. It was arranged that the Poppers should stay in New York just long enough to see the expedition off. Meanwhile, in the harbor, the great sailing ship of Admiral Drake was being made ready for its long trip north. Every day, huge boxes of supplies of all sorts were hustled on board. The most comfortable quarters on the ship were turned over to the penguins, who were the cause of the voyage. Captain Cook was already quite familiar with the ship, since it was the same one the Admiral had sailed to the South Pole, where Captain Cook had often seen it. Greta, too, had seen vessels of its kind. The two of them were kept very busy, showing and explaining everything to Nelson, Columbus, Louisa, Jenny, Scott, Magellan, Adelina, Isabella, Ferdinand, and Victoria. The sailors all took the greatest delight in watching the curious little birds at their explorations.
It looks as if this will be a pretty lively trip, they would say. These Popper penguins certainly live up to their reputation.
But at last, everything was ready,
And the day came when the paupers were to go down and say goodbye. Bill and Janie ran all over the ship and did not want to leave when it was time to draw up the gangplank. The Admiral shook hands with them and Mrs. Pauper and thanked them for having helped to train the extraordinary penguins that were to be a real contribution to science. Mr. Pauper had gone down below to say a private farewell to his birds. All that kept him from breaking down completely was the knowledge that what he was doing was best for them, too. First he said goodbye to all the younger penguins, then to Greta, who had saved Captain Cook. Then, last of all, he leaned over and said a special goodbye to Captain Cook, who had come and made life so different for Mr. Pauper. Then he wiped his eyes, straightened his back, and went up on deck to say goodbye to Admiral Drake.
"Goodbye, Admiral Drake," he said.
"Goodbye," repeated the Admiral. "Why, what do you mean? Aren't you coming with us?"
"Me? Go with you to the North Pole?"
"Why, of course, Mr. Pauper."
"But how could I go with you? I'm not an explorer or a scientist. I'm only a house painter."
"You're the keeper of the penguins, aren't you?" roared the Admiral. "Man alive, aren't those penguins the reason for this whole expedition? And who's going to see that they're well and happy if you're not along? Go put on one of those fur suits like the rest of us. We're pulling anchor in a minute."
"Mama," shouted Mr. Pauper to Mrs. Pauper, who had already gone up the gangplank. "I'm going too. I'm going too. Admiral Drake says he needs me. Mama, do you mind if I don't come home for a year or two?"
"Oh, as to that," said Mrs. Pauper, "I'll miss you very much, my dear. But we have money to live on for a few years. And in winter, it will be much easier to keep the house tidy without a man sitting around all day. I'll be getting back to Stillwater. Tomorrow is the day for the meeting of the Ladies' Aid and Missionary Society, and I'll be just in time. So goodbye, my love, and good luck."
"Goodbye and good luck," echoed the children.
And the penguins, hearing their voices, scuttled up on deck and stood there beside the Admiral and Mr. Pauper. Then they solemnly lifted their flippers and waved as the great ship moved slowly down the river toward the sea. The end. This has been an Hachette audio production of Mr. Pauper's Penguins, written by Richard and Florence Atwater, read by Nick Sullivan, produced and directed by Michelle McGonigal, recorded by Tommy Herron, post-production by Audio Media Production. Mr. Pauper's Penguins is also available in print from Little Brown and Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 1938 by Richard and Florence Atwater. Copyright renewed 1966 by Florence Atwater, Doris Atwater, and Carol Atwater Bishop. Audio production copyright and published 2009 by Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this production may be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system without the prior written permission of the publisher. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.